Welcome to the 37th episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show. My name is Temma Frank and I'm your host. I'd like to thank IBM Canada for their continued support of this show. Last week, we had a conversation with Bruce Good of the Conference Board Center for Business Innovation, and one of the points that really came out there was that Canadian companies are reluctant to export. And yet, we know that given the size of the Canadian market, to really grow, you probably will need to export at some point. So today's episode follows up on that, this time with an interview with Todd Winterhalt, who's the Vice President of International Business Development for EDC, the Export Development Corporation of Canada. We hear a lot about the risks of exporting, and I think maybe that's part of why Canadian companies are reluctant to even consider exporting. It's just a lot simpler and easier to stay at home. But as Todd points out in the interview, there's also a risk of not exporting if your competitors are. By standing still, you can end up going backwards. So in this interview, we talk a little bit about the risks of exporting and how to mitigate those risks. We also talk about where you can go to get help, about the importance of doing good research before you plunge in and what types of research to do, and some of the top mistakes that he sees among newbie exporters. So enjoy the interview and we will chat afterwards. I was chatting earlier this week with Bruce Good from the Conference Board Center for Business Innovation, and their recent research has basically concluded that Canada has a problem not with innovation, but with the willingness of Canadian companies to even get involved in exporting. Is that some of what you see, and what do you think are the reasons behind that?
Yeah, it's a very interesting observation, and I think it is it's a valid one. At the same time, Canada has long been an exporting nation, and you know, doing much of our kind of economic trade and flow and benefit to the country from exports. But I think what's fair to say is it's been traditionally very specifically dedicated to a few markets, and in particular, it obviously perhaps it's the U.S., it's maybe parts of Western Europe, since NAFTA, maybe a little bit more into Mexico. But generally, it's been a very narrow kind of basket of countries that Canadian companies feel comfortable exporting to. And so I would maybe give just a slight tweak on Bruce's comment. I don't think it's exporting in and of itself, but I think it is into the non-traditional markets. And certainly at times of crisis, and we've certainly seen a lot of that over the last couple of years, Canadians tend to be a relatively conservative lot, I think it's fair to say. And so they will often perhaps pull back a little bit and focus on domestic activity or really look to the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. That's been a traditional pattern we've seen. What we try to do at EDC is counsel that while that might feel like the natural course of events, it may actually be a limiting factor for their future growth, because at that moment, that's the ripe opportunity to explore other markets and to not essentially put all your eggs in one basket. So if you're only looking at the U.S., either as an online retailer or as a more traditional exporter of goods and services, and you're solely focused on the U.S., and the U.S. has a very slow go for a number of years, obviously your risks go up quite significantly.
Yep.
If on the other hand, you've explored opportunities, whether it's even just slightly further afield into Mexico, other parts of LATAM, or more and more into Asia, where we see wonderful opportunities, that really just allows you to mitigate some of that risk and essentially spread it out. Mm-hmm. So that's been one of our key messages, is that that's very worthwhile to do. And there are many ways in which you can do it. So it doesn't have to just be a direct export. And we often talk about, in particular for some of the smaller players in Canada, the opportunity to look at the supply chains. So where they're already working with another company in Canada or in the U.S., how can they get involved in that larger company's supply chain who maybe is selling into some emerging markets or markets where they would be less comfortable going on their own? That, in effect, does the same thing, right? It still helps them mitigate the risk.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that, what exactly that would mean for a company and how they would do that?
Sure. So often, and you can actually see it across quite a number of sectors, whether it's, you know, it's auto parts supply, ICT, another good example, medical devices would be another one. It really is quite broad-based. If there's a Canadian company that has an existing relationship with, for example, a U.S. manufacturer who is a bit of a bigger player and who does have operations into a number of other markets, through their relationship with that U.S. manufacturer, they can really, I think, explore whether or not there's an opportunity to supply their equipment into additional opportunities wherever they may be. It might be Asia, it might be Africa, it could be Latin America. I can give you one specific example in the Western Europe space. Huge multinational Siemens out of Germany, who is multi-sectoral, who does procure a number of goods from Canada. They also do a great deal of work, for example, in North Africa. So you could think about hospital construction. There might be very few Canadian companies, and in particular SMEs, who on their own would say, that's a great opportunity for me in Morocco or in another country in North Africa. But through a relationship with Siemens out of Germany, if they can get into that supply chain and supply that hospital in North Africa, the end result is the same for them.
Right.
And so it is really about understanding those relationships and those networks, and essentially going at the pace that the company is comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, I think, the other important message is if you try to stretch too far, too fast, in particular as an SME, you know, your risk goes up fairly significantly. So wherever you can leverage existing relationships, and through a supply chain like that, or sometimes through partnerships, which is another big thing, through chambers of commerce, either in Canada or in an international market, through an industry association, through using folks like, I'll put in a shameless plug here, like EDC, or through our good colleagues in the Trade Commissioner Service out of Foreign Affairs, Trade and Development, that can really help, and it can take a lot of that initial hard work and assessment off their ledger.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's interesting because you're talking about, you know, getting into the supply chain and forming partnerships with others. It really does bring to mind part of, again, what the conference board was saying in our interview, which was Canadian companies tend not to understand the whole notion of channel agreements and how the channels work and partnership agreements. I almost wonder if perhaps that's an area where we need to be doing a better job of educating our businesses, that it doesn't have to be all or nothing in terms of exporting.
Yes, I think it's a good observation. And again, it does really depend, you know, on the level of sophistication of the exporter. When somebody's really just getting into that space and really thinking, yeah, I'd like to try and see what I can do outside of Canada and perhaps outside of Canada and the U.S., you're right, there are a number of vehicles that people can look at. So there are partnership agreements. There are ways to have a representative on the ground in a market, to leverage things like the chambers in an international market, to look at things like joint venture agreements and things of that nature. So that it's not all or nothing.
So how would a company find local partners in another country?
What we often see to be among the most helpful places to go are the chambers of commerce in both countries. So I'll give you an example of Brazil. It's just kind of top of mind for me. So there's a Brazil-Canada Chamber of Commerce here with a number of offices in Canada, across Canada, as well as a Canada-Brazil Chamber of Commerce in Brazil, who keep all kinds of lists of lawyers, agents, representatives, accountancy firms, what have you, people who can offer taxation and customs advice, anything that might be required. Chambers are a great place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Trade Commissioner Service as well would be, I'd actually put them on the top of the list, to be honest. Again, because they've been doing this kind of thing for well over 100 years and in over 145 markets, they've got a wealth of experience and knowledge in that, and that is one of their primary value adds for a Canadian exporter or investor. And then industry association would be the last one I would mention.
Mm-hmm.
And those vary from industry to industry, so that kind of depends. But some that are very much export-focused or international-focused also have a great wealth of information that they can leverage.
Okay. If you were running a smaller, mid-sized business and thinking maybe you wanted to expand your market, how would you even pick a target country to start with? How would you decide where to start?
Well, a couple of things maybe I'd offer. One, I think it is very important to do a very large deal of research right up front. So,
yes.
You know, before, because often we'll see somebody who, a company gets presented with a singular opportunity somewhere and they think, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, I've never gone before. Wow, this is wonderful. I'm going to just dive in and take this opportunity. That comes with a number of risks there, and you do need to be quite cautious. So we often say it is very, very important to do a lot of front-end work, and sometimes that feels a little bit painful for the company, but it almost always pays dividends. So absolutely doesn't hurt to do some of that initial research using whatever tools you can find on your desktop, frankly. I mean, there's a lot out there that you can find online, again, through some of these partners and their online resources that I've talked
yep.
about. But as you get closer and as you start to narrow down either the market you're interested in, or a particular opportunity you're interested in, it is absolutely critical to actually get on the ground. Even for an SME, it's important to go there and really size up the opportunity personally, to meet with either the rep or the agent or the lawyer that's going to help with that particular transaction, yeah, to really understand it. It's, you know, it's that you really have to be able to get your hands dirty and, you know, take that plunge and actually get to the market and really understand the opportunity before you go ahead. That saves so many headaches in the future. Mm-hmm. You can't even count it. The other thing that's a really good idea sometimes is to talk to counterparts and competitors in the industry who have started to go in that direction. While that might seem counterintuitive for some small businesses, we certainly find that that adds a lot of value to the conversation. So, you know, if another counterpart organization has recently done something similar either in the region or in the same market, having a chat with them, what has your experience been? You know, have you had trouble? What's worked well? It can be very, very helpful because it's just much more tangible for folks. You know, it's somebody who's actually going through it.
Okay, that makes sense. One of the things, you know, when I think about exporting and what we hear and see generally, it's a lot about the risks and the negatives and the risks that, you know, the manufacturers might not do what they claim or that you might get burned and not paid. So how do you weigh the pros and cons of taking those risks?
Well, some of it is, I guess, really a pure business decision at the end of the day. I mean, you need to look at things as an organization and say, you know, are we performing to the level we'd like to? Okay, here's perhaps another opportunity in a new market for us, and it really does come with some risks. But you're right, you do need to understand the opportunity side, and I guess another risk I put on the table from the other direction is the risk of not doing anything while your competitors do.
Good point.
You know, you might be quite cautious and nervous about it, all that piece you've mentioned, and of course there are lots of things. There are CSR issues. There are, you know, will the counterparty really do what they're going to say? Are we going to get paid? And all that sort of thing. But if your competitors are taking that leap and you're not, you know, that's not going to bode well for the company either. I think what's important is many of the risks that people do focus on can be mitigated. And so that's where the company needs to do whatever they can ahead of time, again, to try and mitigate those risks. So some of it is know your customer stuff. Some of it is, you know, what can you do to better understand the relationships in market? And then there's also the piece where financial risks can be mitigated. So through things that, you know, a financial services provider like EDC can offer, like an accounts receivable insurance program or more broadly, credits insurance, but we actually will issue a policy that gives the exporter peace of mind that should that not happen, they will still get paid for the good or service that's been delivered.
Right.
You know, there are all kinds of ways to mitigate those risks, which give you a bit more comfort, and then you can focus as a business on how can we really grow what we're doing? How can we grow this footprint? How can we become more successful and hopefully see a positive revenue impact for our company?
Is there a particular stage in a business life cycle or a particular size at which it really starts to make sense to look seriously at exporting?
Yeah, you know, that's a hard question because it is very specific, I think, to the organization and to the industry. So, you know, for someone who's in manufacture of advanced technology or equipment, it would be a very different kind of conversation in terms of when do they need to really truly begin exporting versus more of, you know, either a mom and pop shop or somebody who is perhaps a services provider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would vary wildly, frankly, between those pieces. Generally speaking, that's where the research again comes in, is understanding the size of the Canadian market for your product or service, and then your role within that space. So is that market saturated? You know, are there other competitors out there offering similar product or service to what your company does? And if so, and the Canadian market seems, you know, that it's well serviced, then it absolutely does make sense, I think, to look abroad and say, are there opportunities to be met elsewhere? Or is there a niche product or service, or is there something in the way we either manufacture or deliver our good or service that does set us apart? And then that gets more into the marketing part of the equation. And how do you then market that niche element, that piece that does make you different from the other competitors? And if you're going to do that in Canada, you might as well have a view to doing that, you know, outside of Canada right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that the Center for Business Innovation seemed to be saying was that Canadian companies tended really not to understand marketing all that well. Do you see that?
Again, I think it varies pretty significantly between companies and between industries. Where I'd maybe agree, I think, is that, and it's not just Canadian companies, but often kind of Western companies in general, where they maybe don't understand the nuance of marketing is how different it needs to be for different markets. So you really need to understand your target market and your target audience. And so your marketing material that you might have here for Canada, you know, it may not resonate at all to a Brazilian audience or to somebody in Thailand who maybe would be very interested in your product. But the way it's presented in kind of Canadian or U.S. marketing materials, it'll just fall flat. So again, that's why that research part is so important up front is, you know, that all gets wrapped in. How do you put your best foot forward in a new market? I would definitely put, you know, marketing materials, advertising, things of that nature is very important to be considered at that stage too.
So you're best to hire local ad agencies.
Yeah, or have them consult with you.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I hear from American companies that have started selling in Canada is that Canadian audiences don't necessarily respond all that well to some of the approaches they take with American advertising. Do you see that there are noticeable cultural differences between Canada and the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, I think there are. And, I mean, we certainly see it in the international spaces. And, you know, people, I think, just assume that maybe the U.S. is you know, an extension, so to speak, culturally. Or it's perhaps it's a reverse, but we'll get back to ourselves.
I love the way you were about to say that. Actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like that way too, but that may not fly totally, but upon review. But in any event, I think you're right to suggest that they are different. And, you know, I'd look at the U.S. and I'd almost break it up into regions. So I'd say, you know, you're kind of American South, your Midwest, your West Coast, you know, are all very different in terms of markets. And so there is a need to tailor, again, your message, your approach to the audience that you find in those locations. A potential buyer in Michigan may be very different than one in South Carolina and one in Arizona. So I think it's a great observation. And, again, it doesn't have to be an overwhelming exercise to, you know, imagine that you have to have 15 or 20 different marketing campaigns or engagement styles based on all different markets. I think just the awareness that it is different and the openness to target markets in a different way and approach audiences differently is the right place to start.
Mm-hmm. My listeners tend to be companies that are interested in selling online. And obviously, if you're selling online, in theory, you could be selling to anywhere.
Right.
So one of the questions that pops into my mind is often Canadian companies that are selling online are actually importing products that are made elsewhere to sell them in Canada. If you're doing that but then want to sell abroad, would it make more sense to just go to those, somehow find agreements with those manufacturers so that you actually distribute from that other country rather than bringing it over to Canada, then sending it back out again?
Yeah, so I guess my thought there would be, I'm assuming that there's some kind of transformation or value add that the Canadian company makes to either the product or service to then resell it. So they're essentially importing a component, right, of the final product that they want to sell. If that's the case, then absolutely that would be one way to look at things, would be to say to, you know, the manufacturer of that critical component that's being imported is to exactly talk about having an agreement, and maybe it's a joint venture, maybe it's just a partnership agreement of some kind, you know, even a kind of to start a remarketing agreement where, you know, they could provide the value add component to the original manufacturer. And then, you know, use that existing facility and those existing relationships to access that local market in that sense. Absolutely, that would work. I mean, let's be frank, that's very common, right, in terms of how Canadian companies operate. It's quite rare that something is 100%, you know, CanCon, as you say, because this is a globalized trade environment. So, you know, components for all kinds of products and services, frankly, come from everywhere, get put together in a packaged way that really then is the final product. And then get resold, re-exported, or sold to a Canadian market. So if there's a way to leverage those relationships in terms of the input, absolutely, that makes some sense because you have that existing relationship, and that makes your life easier.
From what you've seen, what would you say are the fields or products or services in which Canada really has perhaps a natural competitive advantage that we ought to be leveraging better?
I think, you know, a lot of it probably won't be surprising to you, Tamara. I think, you know, when we look to anything that's essentially tied to our natural resources side of the ledger or commodities more broadly, obviously we're very well positioned, I think, to do well in the international spaces there. And it's important to say it's not just the commodities in and of themselves. So it's not just the energy export. It's not just, you know, lentils or grains or what have you, but it's actually anything tied to that. So it's technology, it's services, it's, you know, process efficiencies tied to agricultural distribution, for example, it is, you know, energy efficiencies that can be derived from things like smart grids or robotics on power lines. It's very broad, but the basis, I guess, where we do see a natural kind of advantage in terms of how we've evolved our own natural resources here in Canada and anything tied to that, that would be one area for sure.
Okay.
I think ICT is another space I would mention, and I touched on that a little bit already, whether that's, you know, kind of remnants in the broader kind of telecommunications and now kind of broader ICT space, whether that's data management. If you broaden that a little bit, medical devices, it, you know, there's a lot that's very, in some cases, very niche, but very cutting edge, and where we do very well. I think, you know, we've also seen on more on this, services side, on the financial services side, you know, we're starting to see Canadian companies be quite successful and, you know, Sun Life or things of that nature, you know, very successful in international spaces. And on the transportation side of the equation, both autos, auto parts, auto supply, technologies, tool and die makers, aerospace, ground transportation, you know, we're quite strong in many of the transportation areas as well.
Now, it's interesting, you know, speaking of transportation, of course, when it comes to e-commerce, one of the biggest challenges that Canadian companies face even within the country is the costs of transportation. Mm-hmm. So how can we as a country be competitive internationally when we're so far away from most markets?
Yeah, it is absolutely a part of the cost of doing business. As companies sit down and they really do their business case and they look at what do the numbers really have to tell me to make this a worthwhile endeavor, which again is absolutely critical to do at the front, they will find, frankly, that transportation is a very big element of that incremental cost. And, you know, there are a number of ways to try and reduce that. And that is, you know, really, frankly, it's the basic stuff. It's shopping around. It's looking at the different possibilities, the different means and methodologies to actually transport their good or service. You know, does it need to go by air? Can it go by cargo ship? What about within Canada? You know, can it be rail? Can it be trucked? I mean, you know, there are all of these kind of basic questions needed to be answered. And where there's sometimes the possibility to work within an industry and again leverage, you know, contacts and industry association piece to understand if there's ways to kind of almost partner up, or parcel, you know, shipments with like-minded companies and obviously not likely competitors, but with others to help reduce some of those costs, you know, that's something that should be considered. But it's absolutely right. If you're trying to access the Asian market for the first time, yes, you know, your transportation costs are going to be significant. And you know, at the end of the day, the price that someone's willing to pay has to make sure that obviously you're going to cover that at a bare minimum. And that is something that people do need to factor in.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the most common mistakes that you see new exporters make?
The top one for me would be not spending enough time and energy up front in terms of really understanding the opportunity and the cost attached to it and the risks that kind of flow from that. It's easy to feel like, hey, somebody really likes me. I've got this opportunity. It's outside of Canada. I don't even know how they heard about me. This is wonderful. And it's, you know, you know, it kind of pumps your tires to use some jargon, right? But at the end of the day, you have to kind of take a step back and say, all right, but in actual fact, how easy is this going to be to do? And what are the risks there?
Yeah.
Do I understand the market? And let's take a pause and make sure we're truly ready for what's laying ahead of us there. So the research up front and making sure it is the right opportunity. Don't just jump at that first opportunity. Once you've done your research and you've had a few calls and conversations, or you Skype with an agent or a lawyer or somebody in market, to my mind, that's still not good enough. You still need to actually go that last step and get to market and get boots on the ground and really understand that everything is exactly as it seems. And use all those partners we've talked about that you can in market to validate that for you. That's the second piece I would say that often isn't done. People think, I can do all of this online, you know? And yes, to a degree, a lot can be done, but there's nothing that'll replace, you know, that kind of handshake, looking somebody straight in the face, understanding the need, in particular on the buyer side, but then in terms of all the support you're going to need from an advisory capacity, and really, you know, feeling you've got that comfort level as high as you possibly can get it before you go out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, for an SME, if it's the first time they go and there is a mistake made, that might be it. I mean, that impact could be dramatic for them.
Absolutely.
And so it's absolutely worth taking the time to get it right.
That makes sense. Actually, it's interesting because in 2001, I set up a company called Web Mystery Shoppers, and it basically we were doing large sample size feedback of people's reactions to websites and what they could do to make them more effective, communicate better, sell better.
Right.
And I did have that experience of getting contacted by a number of companies from elsewhere in the world. And, you know, when you talk about the excitement of what seems like a great opportunity, I had a wonderful fellow from Israel, actually, who traveled all the way to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, to meet with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything looked great until we looked at the pricing structure. And the fact is, customers in Israel were not willing to pay as much money as customers here were. And it just didn't make sense economically to do what we were doing there. So absolutely, that research up front is crucial, despite how flattering it seems when somebody wants to take your service or product elsewhere.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, and by extension, the company might even look at that and say, well, okay, it's that in and of itself isn't that appealing, but if that opens the door to something bigger that might be, then maybe they're willing to, you know, do the old loss leader thing. But it is very important to know that ahead of time, to your point.
Yeah. Any other advice that you would offer to Canadian companies, smaller ones, that are thinking maybe they should dip their toes in exporting?
It is really worth their while to step back and have a good long look at the opportunities and perhaps the opportunity lost of not exporting.
Yeah.
And just really do it in full view of all the risks. Take advantage of everything that's out there to mitigate those risks.
Mm-hmm.
But to really help kind of diversify their, you know, their operation would, you know, in almost all cases really serve them very well in the long run.
So I'll give you an opportunity for a plug here. Apart from insurance, what services does EDC provide that would help?
As a financial institution, is essentially a full service provider, both on the insurance side, and we talked a little bit about things like accounts receivable insurance or credit insurance. We also have a bonding program here for performance bonds and things of that nature that are sometimes very helpful for companies as they look to go to new markets and need to demonstrate they can do what they actually say they can do. EDC also offers political risk insurance to help mitigate some of those concerns.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's largely the insurance side. We also have a financing book that does, you know, both supplier and buyer financing, so that if somebody is able to find that right partner and they have a great opportunity for a sale, but either the buyer needs financing or the supplier does, EDC is also able to operate in that way, and frankly, we have done so in well over 100 markets.
So you would actually provide financing to a buyer in a different country?
That's correct.
Oh, cool.
As long as it's, you know, it's providing that that window for the Canadian exporter to sell their product or service. Exactly right.
I've been lucky. I've managed to have clients in the United States, in England, and had inquiries from many other countries about setting up operations there. So I'm well aware of the possibilities of export and even of the fact that sometimes you can export and do it just from your home office here in Canada. But one of the points that Todd made and really stressed is that in most cases, in order to export, especially if you're getting involved in something really expensive or that involves physical shipment of products or goods, you really need to get your boots on the ground in the other country before you get too heavily involved. There's a huge amount of trust that goes into an export relationship, and it's very, very difficult to develop that kind of trust without at least some initial face-to-face contact. On the other hand, as he points out, it's really important that you do your research before just hopping on a plane, because otherwise you can blow through a heck of a lot of money. One program you should be aware about if you're thinking of exporting is the CDMN Soft Landing Program. The Canadian Digital Media Network offers a program that lets mature startups and small and medium-sized companies really get to know a country or area that they're thinking of exporting to. And the way it works is they give you the opportunity to visit somewhere else in the world where you think you've got a reasonable prospect of being able to do business. They help connect you with a bunch of businesses there, and usually with an accelerator office where they'll provide you with office space and contacts and people you can discuss your ideas with. It's a really phenomenal opportunity. They also, of course, pay for your travel to and from that country, and it can go on for up to 3 months. I would really recommend you look into this. I will have a link to it on the show notes page at frankonlinemarketing.com. There are other programs. The Foreign Affairs will sometimes put on trade missions to places. And I think one of the most valuable resources that you really should consider if you're thinking of exporting is the Canadian Foreign Affairs Department, because they're the people on the ground in throughout the world, and they can give you invaluable expertise. So don't be too timid. Think seriously about exporting. If you really want to grow your business in a serious way, ultimately you can't just confine yourself to Canada. You will need to go further afield. And relying only on the U.S. market in itself can be a pretty dangerous strategy, as we saw when the American economy collapsed a few years back. That's it for this week. I do look forward to chatting with you again next week. And in the meantime, if you would like to provide some feedback, I would be eternally grateful. You can reach me directly, Tema, T-E-M-A, at frankonlinemarketing.com. Or you can visit the website and leave a voicemail message at no charge to you through a little link that's there on the page. And of course, you can reach me on Facebook, on Twitter, on all the other various places you might expect, LinkedIn. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, you can do so in iTunes or Stitcher or a few other places. So I'd really recommend you take a look at doing that. And if you've got any ideas for companies that you think would be really interesting for me to interview, or if there are special topics you'd really like me to cover, please do give me feedback. I look forward to our next conversation. Bye.